But where we'll start, I think, and I'll come to you first, Philippe, if I may, and you tweeted this, actually, about the role of the retailer and then the role of the producer. And we heard from Hans-Jürgen how, in many ways, the solution is one of, yes, of course, focusing on quality. We always expect a retailer to say that, and quite understandably they should. Focusing on the matter of taste, because with taste we get repeat purchase and so on and so forth. But the key issue that I took from his presentation was that it's about communicating with the consumer. It's about having that kind of last step that we need to talk to consumers and get consumers to buy our products and buy our products again and again and again. Now, as a major producer that you are in Europe, what attitude do you take to that perspective that you heard from Hans-Jürgen? And I'm sure we'd hear from many other retailers, some of whom are here today, other retailers in Europe.
Well, first I must say when I heard the presentation of Globus, I was very happy because they're actually making distinctions in the market. He's talking about different kinds of vegetables. Of course, he's talking about quality. By the way, one small remark, the picture of endive was horrible. It was a bad endive. You should change it. When you're talking about, I'm sorry, I sell a lot of endives, over 50 million kilos a year, and it wasn't good endive. Nevertheless, the rest of the presentation was great, and I think when you're talking about the diversity in the market, diversity of tomatoes and so on, I can fully follow you. I think it's also for the grower an opportunity, a way out, because as long as they're in the bulk market, they're in the losing end. They're the egg that the gentleman showed us, the squeezed egg. I was thinking about my grower. He's also squeezed a bit like an egg. And when you're talking about the middle group that's squeezed, I think the first one that's squeezed is the grower. But the opportunities that retailers like Globus give us, and it's maybe a pity that not all the Belgian retailers are here present today. They should have heard your presentation. That gives us opportunities, first of all. Secondly, and that was one of the topics that we are working on as a cooperative, as Belorta as well. We think we have, and we've been counting this year, we had one new product every 2 weeks.
One new product every two weeks.
And then, you, especially in tomatoes and kinds of lettuce, and some lichens and so on. So it's very diverse, it's changing. The last 17 years, we had one new product a year. This year, we had one new product every two weeks. So that's a real change in the market.
Just let me understand that exactly. You're saying that there's a new product that the market has not been seen before that's coming every 2 weeks? Yeah. Or you mean a new season that's starting for a new product?
No. I'm talking about new products. And that's because the prices are so bad, especially in tomatoes and cucumbers and so on, that our growers are looking for other products. The Syngentas of this world are making new kind of tomatoes on a very quickly base. We're making new apples on a very quickly base. For example, Belgium apples was Jonagold for 15 years. And I think in the last 2 or 3 years, nobody still understands what is a Jonagold, what's another apple, and so on. And especially in tomatoes and so on, I think there is a need for the retailer and the grower organizations to work together to explain the consumer what are the different kinds of tomatoes, how do you deal with them, where do you use them for? Because even for us, it's almost impossible to follow it. And a lot of those different new tomatoes, I don't think the consumer has a message on it. Sometimes it's different for the grower, for the expert, but not for the housewife.
Let's explore that subject in a moment. But I just want to come back to this thing you were saying about the producer feeling squeezed, like the egg that Ed showed us. Is that a squeeze where they're thinking, I'm not making enough money? Or is that a squeeze that it's all getting too complicated and I can't deal with all of these different things? Mm. Or the retailer is demanding too much of me? Or I just don't like this anymore? Where is the squeeze happening?
No. I think that the squeeze is especially on a financial base. He's as efficient as possible, a grower. And when you go with the growers organization like Belorta, is a lot of services we take care of for the grower, almost for nothing, thanks to subventions from the EU, of course, because everything has to be paid. But that's not the point anymore. But the basic price he gets, and then I come back to the retailers, the middle playing field from retailers, you see a very horizontal concurrence between the retailers. They have a certain cost, an intrinsic cost, which is to the retailer. They have their shops, they have their people, they have their trucks, they have their everything. And you've seen it in the presentation, the price must go down. So the price goes down at the grower's end. There's no other place where the price can go down. And at that moment, then you see that the grower can hardly survive or can't survive anymore.
This question about the price going down, Ed said that there's a danger there, isn't there? Because we as it were, deflate the market, and it's very difficult to then to bring it back up. And again, following on Twitter, Andrew, this was something you noted, this question about prices and the price going down, and how do we get the price back up? Comment on that before we come onto this communication issue.
I noted that because I've lived through that experience on potatoes, and I think that's a big message for everybody else out there not to follow that particular line of thought, because if you want to stick at £1.99 retail for a 2.5 kilo potato, so you take half a kilo out, you're right. How are you going to grow your market back? And what we're seeing in the potato market, coming onto the squeeze middle is four companies. If you look at the detail in Ed's
the UK,
presentation,
you mean four retailers.
If you look at the detail in Ed's presentation, you'll see that within that squeeze middle, there are still some winning areas. The premium products, the taste, the difference is the finest. And you know, we have a saying in Produce World, sumo.
Sumo.
Stop, understand, and move on. So you've got to understand what's going on in the marketplace. And if you strip away the companies, there's growth at the premium end and there's growth at the cheaper end of the market. So the NPD point is really good, because what that is actually growers expressing an interest to get involved with the premium end of the market. And I think the other interesting point is, how do we then communicate why that product is a premium product to a consumer? A retailer will be stocking 20 odd thousand SKUs in a store.
SKUs, yeah.
Yeah. They can't focus on each individual product. And this is where I think the role of private brands could actually be better than the retailer own brand, because the producer can then invest in the message and in the marketing to the consumer to communicate the benefits of that product. And I find this a constant frustration in the UK, that we get really good products to the point of market, and then we fail to get off the launch pad because we can't communicate properly with the consumer.
Well, these are two issues that you've raised. One about the amount, the variety of products we have in tomatoes that we're going to hear about in the session after the lunch. And then we're going to be talking about this question about branding. Andy McDonald of Tenderstem is going to be talking about, you know, a brand initiative there that seems to have been very, very successful if one looks at the figures. Let me come to you, Enrique. A major supplier sitting in Spain facing this market and the diverse markets that you have, the UK, Germany, and many other markets that you supply, this issue of that middle market, we've seen growth at the top, growth, shall we say, at the bottom, the discounter. You're supplying, of course, all of these parts of the market. What challenges do these developments have for you as a supplier in Spain when you're seeing such market changes?
Well, as you say, we see clearly that there are two main strategic positioning in Europe, these two, and these are winners. The rest, we bet that they will be losers in the medium, or they are already losers. So we try to align with these winner customers that we have, discounts and premiums. Whatever is in between, we try to supply, but not align. It's difficult to get aligned with someone that doesn't know exactly where to go.
And explain to me then the difference between alignment and supply. What does that mean for you from your strategic point of view?
Supply is, if you give me the right price and I have it, I give you. Alignment is I will provide almost at any cost.
And this question of the differentiation between alignment and supply, that change in understanding of the market, is that something that's been quite recent for you, or is it something that goes back already some time?
Well, it's been in the market, but during the last maybe 10 years, it has been clear discounts in Germany were like a rocket. Premium, the niche was coming narrower, but still there. So it was clear for us. But for us, the main issue is that in order to be aligned with one of these strategies is to get a communication with retailers. And sometimes we have a sensation that we two are running like headless chickens in this business, because they are competing one each other like crazy, and we are competing one each other with my neighbor cooperative, which is 100 meters far from me. And at the end of the day, it's all of a sudden too many producers, too many kind of tomatoes, too many brands, too many packagings, too many information. And where's the business? If business for growers is becoming narrower and narrower. So,
But I guess the answer to some of that is that the market will decide what happens. And, you know, the more competitive ones will survive, the less competitive ones will not survive. Or, like you have done in Belgium recently, you've actually decided, look, we need to get together. We need to get together, work together, so we don't compete against one another, but we're better able to supply or to meet the suppliers, the buyers' demands, and presumably keep our costs under control at the same time. Is that the kind of solution that you've sought for here in Belgium, Philippe, and is it working for you?
Well, is it working? I must say we have been merging for 4 years. We have four mergers in 4 years. And this is the first year. We're not having a merger. This is the first year we can work. But I'm supposed it can work. It will work. First of all, you had the price competition in Belgium, which is a kind of... there's not that much competition anymore, which is in general better for the prices. Secondly, when you come with a big company like Belorta, it's possible to follow your retailers in a more deep way, to have more contact with them, to have communicate more with them. We're thinking even about next year and the following years having a communication program with the consumers. First of all, we're focusing on Belgium. 50% of our turnover goes to Belgium, the rest goes to the rest of Europe. But we have the money to communicate with the Belgian consumer, together with our retailers, and that's the kind of partnerships we want to develop and develop in the next years. And that's why where I follow my colleague. You have to align with the retailer, talk with them. But of course, the first demand is that the retailer knows which position in the market he takes. And that's sometimes difficult when you see the changing, for example, at Delhaize, three CEOs in 4 years, which also means three new strategies in 4 years. At the end, I think the retailer is the chicken, not us, but nevertheless, you have to cope with them, you have to try to follow them, and that's what we're trying to do, and maybe even go further, and from the producer side off, tell a retailer what do we think that the trends are, or the observations we make, and to guide them in the market. Of course, they know the consumer better than we do, but trend watching, you don't have to have 1 million customers a day to know which trends are in the market. And we have a bureau, for example, which is really surveying the market and the trends in the market. And in that way, that's something new for us. We don't only want to supply vegetables, we also want to advise our customers what they should do. And we want to be product specialists, that's something we always did, but now we also want to become a market specialist, specialized in the market, and to give some added value to the product, namely advice to our customers.
And I'd like to explore, if I may, this point that you've made, Enrique, about supply and alignment a bit more, and I'd like to come to you, Andrew, because it ties in with something that Philippe has just said, and you said earlier, this question about how you think that there's an opportunity for, you call them private brands, for, as it were, producer brands, back in store. Now that seems incredible for an Englishman to say in a market like the UK where it's been all about private label for the last 25 years, and to get a brand into the market seems almost impossible. And I'm intrigued to know that you see that there are opportunities there, and I'd like you to hear tell us more about that. And I'd like to come to you, Enrique, about that as well, because I know that's something you're doing. But this question about private as it were, producer brands and the opportunity to get them into the market. What you want to do is align and not just supply.
That's a very good question.
Thank you.
Am I on? I'm on, right. Getting brands into the UK market is very difficult. I mean,
starting to do it.
We're trying to do it, particularly with new products, because we feel that in order to communicate the value of a product, the quality value, and I think quality is a very broad subject as well. It's understanding what quality means to a customer. When you eat a tomato, it's what it feels like in your mouth, what it tastes like, that explosion of flavour. That's what quality is. It's not whether it's 10 millimetres or 11 millimetres. And I think, so first of all, we have to understand what quality means to the consumer. And then one of my frustrations is that because there's no focus on a particular product with private with the own label, supermarket own label, that they find it very difficult to communicate to the customer that we want to get to for these new products. And when you're trying to grow a premium range and launching lots of new products, I mean, we're not doing one a week, but you know, we're trying to do quite a few. It's getting that communication across to the consumer that's going to make these products either work or not work. Getting people to try them in the first place and then enjoy them and then want to come and buy them again.
But how do you do that if the interface between you and the consumer is a retailer who wants to promote his private label?
Well, again, I mean, I've lived through several failed attempts at trying to get brands into supermarkets, and a lot of it is down to the fact that, you know, having the brand, having the connection with the consumer does represent an element of power, which nobody wants to give up. So it's difficult to get past that, but you have to be able to demonstrate to the retailer that you're actually going to add to his category. And there are some successful examples, things like Rooster Potatoes and Florette, that have been heavily invested in communicating with the consumer, you know, through television advertising as much as magazines and things as well. So you can actually break it through, and it does actually help the retailer grow his overall category. And that's what you've got to be able to persuade them to do, that you're going to grow the overall category. Mm-hmm. I don't mind doing brands that are first to market for 2-3 years and then going into private label. I don't mind doing that. But I just think when you're launching a new product, you've got to be able to communicate with your customer.
And interestingly as well, of course, is the customer, the shopper, me, shall we say, is much more interested to have that kind of communication with the producer. I turned on the television recently at home on a Sunday evening. There's a big program on the BBC, and who do I see but this gentleman? And I thought, wow, what's he doing on the television? And he's become,
Crime Watch.
you know, there was a big program there devoted to vegetable production, wasn't there?
Yep.
That the BBC did. And it wasn't that you were stopped in the street by people the following day, but it certainly created an echo out there in the industry. And that, for you as a producer, to be able to, as it were, talk directly with the consumer without the, as it were, the funnel or the person in the middle, the retailer, must be a very exciting prospect to you. But how do you kind of harvest that into growing your sales?
Well, it's very difficult. I mean, I did that program on behalf of the UK industry, not particularly for our own company, although
mm-hmm,
I have to say it's been quite beneficial for us.
I'm sure.
And it was, as you said, an excellent example of how to communicate to the consumer, and we did have a lot of fantastic feedback from consumers about that show. But getting them to give up power to let us communicate with the customer, I mean, it's just like banging your head on a brick wall sometimes. But I think one or two of our customers are more open to us talking to their consumers through their own private magazines and things like that, doing mm-hmm. articles. But actually launching the brands themselves, and we've got to persuade them that we're going to help them grow their categories. And if we can't do that, they're not going to let us launch the brands.
Enrique, I come to you about this question about branding. What do you think about what Andrew has said? You're trying to push the private brand, aren't you, as well? Your own brand, shall we say, through retail. Tell us something about that.
Well, I have to agree with Andrew on many things. The thing is that there are two main things, I think, that they are a kind of barrier for the interaction of private brands. One is retailers, that they consider that consumer is mine. Consumer is Brian, I have my brands, I have my relationship, nobody's able to get into my channel. So private brands are something in between, which is dangerous, because you may get my loyalty, may go to other places. So this is the first thing. And the second thing is ourselves, that, as Andrew says, the rules of the game are that we need to invest in marketing, in promotion, in business intelligence, in many things, in order to connect with consumers and also to convince them that they are going to earn more money and be more competitive with our brands rather than without them.
And do you think that the trend where it's dangerous to say that what happens in the UK and what happens in Germany is across Europe, but let's, for the sake of today, say this is the way things are happening. There are changes in France and all other countries, I know. But if we're looking at growth at the top end and growth at the discount end, which kind of removes, or not removes, but puts pressure on this middle market, And it seems to me the middle market is where a lot of the problem is in terms of the brand issue that we've just heard about. Do you think that there's perhaps more potential or more opportunity, therefore, to get through with your brand exercise because of these changes that are happening in the market at the top end and the bottom end?
It's true that they are more open-minded for brands, the people in between. And in principle, it's better because they are more open to introduce your brand. But in the medium and long term, as they don't have a clear strategy in the market, you are betting for the loser because they don't know where to go. So the relationship also with the premium and discounts, we have a personal relationship with them. They know our companies, our strategy, and vice versa and so on. But with the middle in between, the relationship is before we can say good morning, they ask for price. So don't tell me about innovation or whatever. Just tell me the price for this week. And you get tired also. And we look into the eyes one each other, and we are tired one each other. So we need to rethink the relationship in another way or to get away.
Yeah, it's a very interesting
symptom of an over-mature market, what you're looking at in the middle, where everything's been leveled down to price. And the consumer will decide who wins this battle. And as an industry, we have to follow the right consumer trends. So if we're seeing it going to premium and to discount, we've got to modify our business models to satisfy those two ends of the marketplace. And the retailers that are the squeezed middle, they've got to reinvent their business models as well. You know, they've got to take... Some of these middle squeeze retailers are very expensive customers to serve. They have very high technical standards, very high specifications. They have expensive business models themselves with a lot of people, expensive distribution. They need to reinvent themselves as well if they're going to compete. And they need to decide what they want to be, whether they want to be a discount or whether they want to be a premium retailer, and build their business model appropriately.
Very interesting.
The market will find them out.
Any questions or comments that anybody has, please, from the audience. Raise your hand and my colleague Hans will come. Yes, at the far back. And if you could tell us your name, where you're from.
I'm Peter Jens from Koppert and from Pure Natura and from another. As long as we call this a tomato, I think our industry is doomed.
But it is a tomato.
It is a tomato, but if as long as we treat it as a tomato, we are doomed. If I look at the pharma industry, it costs roughly $1 billion to produce a new molecule that works in health. Mm-hmm. This little friend of mine probably has 1,000 compounds that can be used in preventive medicine. And what I feel with the discussion at the podium is that we fail to understand that our industry is Europe's number one health provider. And I'm also working in the medicine industry, so I know what kinds of flows of money go around. And I think it's good to focus on taste, to focus on a consumer experience. But we will be given, our industry will be given the opportunity to really become the number one health provider in Europe. There's only one catch, and that is we have to focus on nutrients in our produce. Our nutrients must become, of our produce, our little friends, must become even more relevant.
Peter, one point I wanted to make to you, though, is I've heard this many times said, that the danger about focusing on health is consumers don't want to be told, eat this because it's good for you. They want to eat it because it tastes good, or they like it, or it's, you know, makes their girlfriend feel happy, or whatever it is.
You're totally right. Yeah. We should not be the ones saying this is healthy, but big politics do, and big politics will. We enhance the consumer experience.
Big politics, you mean government, the European Commission?
There are even supranational bodies.
Okay. Andrew?
Funnily enough, Peter, we were having exactly the same discussion in London the other day. I was with Guy Poskett at a meeting. And one or two of the really stark facts: in Britain alone, a 1% reduction in cancers and heart diseases would save the government £1 billion. I don't know the exact number, but something like that. And yet, we don't have any joined-up strategy about health promotion of fresh vegetables in particular. Because fruit's actually quite a little bit easier story to tell because of the sweet flavours and everything. So we were thinking about how do we actually change consumer behaviour? Because you're right, you know, we've got the five-a-day campaign. Everybody knows about the five-a-day campaign. Even the small children know about the five-a-day. But they don't like being told what to do. So I think we need to undertake some research and development, probably in the social sciences area, to understand what really does change behaviour in diets. And I think once we answer that question, we might stand a chance of actually getting government departments joined up, because it's about health, it's about education, and it's about the well-being of the nation. Get them joined up to work with the newly discovered sciences to actually promote the consumption of fresh vegetables.
But as Ed, I think, pointed out in his presentation earlier, you know, you've got obesity levels that are higher than ever. In our country, I think, we might not be the world champions at football, but we are at becoming obese, apparently.
Second after America, I think.
The problem, is it not, that the consumer at the end of the day makes a decision. He says, I'm going to buy this or I'm going to buy this. And the government can say whatever it wants, but the consumer at the end of the day is going to say this or choose to buy this or choose to buy that. We have to find, surely, it's important that we have that background, that background of saying buy this, buy this, buy this, it's good for you. But at the end of the day, the consumer has to come to the shelf and say, I'm going to buy that and not buy that. Enrique, and I come back to you in a second, Peter.
Yes, you see the cigarettes, they say smoke kills.
Yes.
And people still keep on smoking.
Yes.
Even if you put a label on tomatoes saying tomato leaves, people want the tomato like crazy. We need to work out together how to put the healthy body section that we eat, that people will like to eat it, not because medicine says it.
And this is where it comes back that we need to have a relationship with Hans-Jürgen Kirschen, people like that. Peter, did you want to add something?
Yes. I promise you, our industry will be asked to come up with solutions. We will be government's new best friend. So look at that direction as well. Retailers are absolutely not important in our future business. We have a strong societal role to play, and there will be massive funds available.
You sound as though you have an inside track on this particular issue.
I'm an official registered lobbyist in Brussels.
Oh, okay. That's as inside as you can get, I suspect. Any other questions? Yes, the gentleman here. If you could raise your hand so my colleague can find you. Some good exercise for you, Hans. Thank you.
My name is David, and I work for it's a fruit exporting company from Colombia, Ecuador, and Peru. I'm based here in Brussels, but we're thinking about getting into some vegetables. When I hear the discussion going on about how to communicate with the customer, I particularly find...
David, you customer, do you mean the shopper or do you mean the retailer?
The shopper.
The shopper,
the
thank
shopper.
You.
I particularly find a challenge in one of the products that we are selling right now, which is a fruit that is not so well known. And I guess there's several different ways. So you can do tastings, you can do recipes in the magazines of the retailers. I hear Philip saying your strategy of communication will go more in partnership with the retailers, whereas Andrew says we're going to try to do our own brand. So in your experience, of all these possibilities, there has to be some research done on what is most effective. If you ask me as a consumer, I guess to me it's the most effective would be to have a testing, and that's what attracts me the most. I hardly ever look at one of those magazines. I just throw them away immediately as soon as I get them. So, but there has to be some research done on this, how to or what is the most effective way to communicate with the final consumer. What do you think it is the best way?
One of the most effective ways from my point of view is when a friend of mine says, hey, try this, it's really good. And you start eating it, you say, oh, it is good, actually. Andrew, if I can come to you. You were telling me earlier that one of your fastest growing products now is a product called cavolo nero, black cabbage,
yep.
Which for years was used by people who lived in Tuscany in their soup, and that's it. Now a nation of 70 million people apparently are buying black cabbage. How did that happen?
Well, it's actually been out in the marketplace for about 7 or 8 years, but there's a real health trend in Britain at the moment for leaves like kales and the Caballonera sort of falls into that category. It's very interesting to cook with, generates great flavours. There's been quite a lot of recipe work done. And that it took a slow start, but all of a sudden, this last 18 months or so, with the kales, it's really taken off. And we're looking at 30-odd% growth on those types of lines at the minute.
Incredible. Gentlemen, do you want to add to respond to anything that David said, or no? David, I think one of the things you'll also hear is from Jan Doldersum, who's going to be talking about social media. There's a very interesting case study there of how their company is being able to talk direct to consumers using, you know, social media that's available to all of us at the moment. Any other questions or comments that anybody has at this moment? No? Yes, please. Can we get a microphone? Thank you.
Frederik Rosner from Fresh Value Europe, European Fresh Produce Association. I have a question for, I think, more directed to Philippe, but maybe also to the others. We see, we have been talking about trends and the rise in culinary TV channels. I think now we also see a trend towards more gardening programs and encouraging people to have their own vegetable garden. So especially vegetable, because that's quite seems to be the easiest way to grow them. I was just wondering how that may influence us. Will that help? I think it will help increase consumption. But is, do you also consider it maybe as a threat to our industry, particularly to the trade then?
Well, it's absolutely no threat to us. I think the better people know the vegetables, they know the stuff they're eating, they know how hard they have to work with it, the more they're going to buy it. Nice example is endives. You can't export endives to anywhere because people don't know it. The only chance you have is that somebody locally starts to grow endives, and then you can start exporting endives. So as long as a consumer learns about vegetables or about fruits, and the best way to learn is to use it yourself, either by cooking or by growing it, and let's be fair, it won't be grown in that massive quantities by people in their own backyard, so we still have to sell them. And the more they're working with it, the more they're thinking about it, the more they're aware of vegetables, the easier to sell them. One of the nicest things I saw last week in Switzerland, I think it was with Peter, was the urban farming concept, where on the rooftop of a Coop supermarket, they're going to start a garden, well, a small greenhouse with the fish hatchery next to it, and with the water from the fish, they're going to feed the plants, and they're going to sell the tomatoes and the tilapias downstairs in the shop. Is it a threat for the growers in Switzerland? I don't think so. It's an opportunity for the growers in Switzerland. And as for now, those people are managing, and it's a nice thing about urban farming, they're managed to I don't know what was it, Peter, 5 times the regular price, something like that, something incredible. Of course, in Switzerland, people obviously have a lot of money. I think when you try to do it in Holland, it will be a no-go when you do the price by 5. But nevertheless, it's a nice way of talking with people about them, making them aware of, and it's the best thing to stimulate. I think it's the best publicity you can have.
And it's also very good PR, it seems to me, public relations. It makes the consumer feel good. Andrew, you wanted to comment.
Yeah, I just think that one of the biggest problems we've had as an industry, and if you look at the health of the nation and the rise of obesity, is that people have become completely disconnected from where their food comes from. And I think encouraging gardening and allotments and things is a really good way of people reconnecting with their food and starting to understand where it comes from again. And if they grow something in their allotment and they like it, they're only going to have it for a week or two of the year. They're going to enjoy it. They're going to go and buy it when they haven't got it in their allotment. I think it's a great way of growing consumption.
Well, my experience last year was that I had a small plot of my little back garden in central London. And I planted some beans. My mother gave me these beans. And I was out there every evening putting water on them. I must have produced, in all that effort, one meal of beans for myself. And I thought, this is crazy. I'll just go to the supermarket. They're much cheaper, much better quality, and so on. Another question. Yes, Jan.
I don't know if it's a question or maybe a plea to
Jan Doldersen from Rijkswaan.
My name is Jan Doldersen from seed company Rijkswaan. I would like to come back to the discussion we had on nutrition and health. I think it's always like in Congress, there's a lot of been talking, but not really action. And I would like to make a plea. And we are starting already an initiative now in Holland to work together with government, with social insurance companies, with the industry partners, to really do something. We are now here in Brussels, the European capital, we can call. Wouldn't it be nice that maybe as an outcome of this Congress, you say, yes, we are going to put this as top priority in our sector. So I would like to make a plea for that. I know there are a lot of people joining. Corporate Crest, for instance, Best Fest Group is joining this initiative already. So it would be nice to have this as a European initiative.
You should talk to also to Frederick Rousseneau there in front of you, because I'm sure that that's something that is very much on your agenda at Freshfell, Frederick. Any other contributions or questions before we start bringing this session to an end? No? Okay, well, look, there's much more that we're going to explore this afternoon the various debates and discussions that we have left for the rest of the day. And I think in the 45 minutes or an hour that we've had now, we've really looked at the tip of the iceberg in many ways, but we've tried to identify some of the key areas, and it's clear that there are some key areas there. And I'd like, if we could, to thank our three expert panelists for their contributions. If we could, thank you, gentlemen.